You're listening to the Pre-Hospital Care Podcast on the Medics Academy Network.
Welcome back to the Pre-Hospital Care Podcast with myself, Owen Walker. In this episode, we're going to be looking at non-invasive ventilation and innovations in non-invasive ventilation with Erika Savickskaite. What I want to do is look at the recent empirical research that shows that ventilation via helmet interface can mean faster recovery time, shortened stay at ICU, reduce the need to intubate, and reduce mortality. And it can also reduce or minimize sedation of patients. So to do this, I have Erika Savickskaite with me. Erika is a registered nurse based in Chicago and was involved in successful testing of the helmet ventilator in ICU at the University of Chicago during a three-year trial study. Erika has worked as registered nurse and patient care manager at University of Chicago Medical Center, Medical Intensive Care Unit, and as a staff nurse at Vilnius University Hospital. So she earned a Bachelor of Rehabilitation and Nursing at Vilnius University Faculty of Medicine in 2001. Welcome to the podcast, Erika.
Thank you, Owen, for letting me to be here and share my knowledge and experience to your listeners. And I hope we're going to gain a lot of knowledge about helmet interface and hopefully apply it in their practice.
It's absolutely fantastic. I think it's really necessary to have conversations like this because NIV is starting to make its way within pre-hospital care a lot more. So there's a lot more prevalence of use of both CPAP, BiPAP, and non-invasive techniques as a means of bringing patient care forward within the pre-hospital care environment. So it's great to have this conversation. And I suppose a segue to start with, Erika, would be if you could just maybe walk us through your initial story for NIV helmet use, both before and through the COVID pandemic.
Yeah, so you already mentioned that I worked at University of Chicago hospitals. And during my studies at the Rush University College of Nursing, when I was to receive my nurse practitioner degree, I did the clinicals during the study that was run by Dr. Patel and her colleagues, where we used helmet for the patients in ARDS. ARDS is like really sick patients in respiratory distress and are also immunocompromised. So what we needed to do, we wanted to avoid the mechanical ventilation, any invasive intubation as long as we could, and let the other therapies to start working so patients can recover faster and avoid any complications that are associated with intubation. And during that time, this is when I saw the helmet for the first time in my life. So I wanted to let your listeners know how the helmet looks. I will try to describe it in words. It's actually easier when you see the helmet, you understand what it is, but it is a clear plastic hood. And what it allows the patient to have an unobstructed and very clear view. That hood is plastic, so it stays even up without being inflated. And it covers the whole patient's head. Nothing is touching the patient's head. So again, the helmet is pretty, a lot of space inside of it for the patient. So patient can wear any glasses, hearing aids, he can communicate without any obstruction that is usually caused by the face mask, let's say. And also patient can avoid any skin irritation. Then the second part, which is very important, is at the bottom of the helmet, there is a soft collar, which actually creates that seal around the neck. And it's much more comfortable for the patient because around the face mask, seal is created on your face and a mask. So that's a very important feature of this interface. And then it has at least two minimum pipe connectors for the expiratory and inspiratory limbs to connect to the circuit. Also patient access ports, so you can give the patient fluids, food, perform any nursing care that patient needs to have without taking the helmet off. And other features that are there, it depends on what kind of helmet you're using for your patient. Another very important part of the helmet is actually underarm straps. So what happens when the helmet inflates, it starts to rise up like a balloon. And to keep that seal around the neck intact and minimize any air leaks, what we do, we pull that helmet down and connect to the underarm straps. So this is the only one area where we have that that device to touch actually the patient and may cause problems like skin breakdown or irritation. But there are so many tricks to actually prevent that from happening. So this is what I saw. I saw this bulky interface that looked so simple. And, you know, when you work in a medical ICU, you see all the high-end gadgets that you're using with a lot of lights and noises. And when we saw this helmet, we were kind of a little bit skeptical, what is happening here. But when the helmet was used for the immunocompromised patients, and when we saw a great results where patients were able to avoid intubation and leave the ICU, this is why I fell in love with the helmet. So I'm not gonna lie, I really love helmet interface. So far, I hear only good things about, and that's why I actually chose even my capstone paper presentation for when I was finishing my nurse practitioner degree about the helmet patient who survived because of the helmet.
I think we'll actually dig into that paper shortly, actually, Ulrika, because I think that's, like you say, a seminal paper and probably a seminal piece of research as to the benefits of NIV. But could you maybe speak to the wider benefits of non-invasive ventilation, just for people that may and or listeners that may not be aware of the wider benefits?
Yeah, so the non-invasive ventilation, and I like to actually say non-invasive positive pressure ventilation, because there are so many different ways to deliver oxygen to the patient. But sometimes we need to deliver not just oxygen, but also pressure. So as you know, maybe you heard, especially during the COVID pandemic, there is a word PEEP, positive end expiratory pressure. So why is it so important? So what happens in a healthy body when you don't have any respiratory distress, when you exhale air, your lungs don't collapse, they stay open. Because there is your alveoli is healthy, there is no inflammation in the lung. And to open up your lungs again, you just take a deep breath in, right? Now, in patients who have respiratory distress, there is some type of inflammation in alveoli. And what happens when we exhale, just a normal exhalation, some of these alveoles will not stay open. They will collapse because of the fluid in there or pus or anything that is obstructing, that causing this whole disease, right? And what we're doing with non-invasive positive pressure ventilation, we're actually helping to keep these alveoles open. We're actually pushing that fluid out. And this way, we are helping the body actually to have a better gas exchange. You have bigger lungs. You have more surface of the lung that is still functioning for these sick patients. And during non-invasive ventilation, we're actually giving more time for other therapies to start working. It can be antibiotics. It can be medications that are used, let's say, for the cardiopulmonary edema. It can be dialysis. It can be even your own immune system that will kick in and actually fight the pathogen that caused the respiratory distress. So this is a bridge that this is that very important time when patient can avoid the intubation if the non-invasive positive pressure ventilation therapy is successful. And definitely the advantages are patient comfort, because you don't have to do the invasive insertion of the artificial airway. You're lowering the risk of infection because you are preserving that airway defense mechanism that we have, that we can cough, speak, swallow. The patient is awake and alert. You're not putting patient in a medical coma or giving so much sedation. So we are able to, again, avoid any cognitive dysfunction or delirium that is very often a result of the sedation in the ICU. Non-invasive ventilation is very easy to use. You can apply and remove it in seconds and minutes. Also, you are able to spend less time in the ICU, which, again, I can talk a lot about all the benefits of shorter ICU stay for the patients. And this way you're reducing the healthcare costs also and letting the other patients to use ICU who really in need. Again, non-invasive ventilation will not replace the invasive ventilation. It's not a replacement of mechanical ventilation. Is that because some patients will need the invasive ventilation. So if you have more ICU beds for those who in need, you're already winning and actually improving the patient outcomes here. So that's non-invasive ventilation in a hospital. Another areas that you can use is transferring patient. So as soon as the patient gets into the ambulance or helicopter or the plane, you can right away start therapy. That's how easy it's to apply. Another place that we all know the non-invasive ventilation is used is to treat the sleep disorders. So at home, people are using CPAP machines. And that's actually huge benefit, you know, for in the long term for all these chronic diseases that patients are having.
So, Ulrika, you spoke about alveolar recruitment, and absolutely, I think it's a fundamental part of the process. Could you maybe speak to the differentiator between so the archetypal face mask, or indeed the CPAP that we might be used to within the UK or the US versus the helmet, just the main differentiators, and maybe indeed even advantages of a plastic helmet versus maybe a mask?
Yeah, very good question. So to keep those alveoli open, I mentioned PEEP. So it's the pressure that we are using when we're setting a helmet CPAP therapy or helmet BiPAP therapy. Or other name actually for the helmet BiPAP is helmet NIV. So keep that in mind when you're reading any studies. If anyone is mentioning helmet NIV, that means that it's bi-level pressure ventilation. So what is happening with increasing the PEEP, increasing that pressure, so you imagine the airflow, the pressure in your mask, if it's on the face, it's getting harder and bigger. And then the problem is the air leaks. Patients start to develop air leaks around the face mask. To prevent that, you're trying different face mask types, but most of the time what you do, you press the mask much harder to your face. And again, people come in a different shape of faces. And to find that perfect seal around the face mask is sometimes very challenging. What happens, patient develops skin ulcers, a lot of pain. So you end up giving a lot of pain medication. And I can tell you, based on my practice, I saw patients who just gave up on the NIV because of that pain. Now with the helmet, what is nice, the same seal is created around the neck. And I know we come in a different size of necks, but it's the same shape. So it's much easier to create that good seal around the neck. And even when you're increasing the PEEP levels, the pressure levels, you will not have that air leak around the neck like you do around the face mask. And that's, again, we will mention that in the studies, it showed that with the helmet, you can actually use much higher PEEPs than you are using with the face mask. Another thing is the patient tolerance. As you know, if you can keep that patient on an uninterrupted therapy for longer time, again, you are giving that more time for other therapies to start working. So the comfort is usually the main discomfort, I would say, of NIV is the main reason why patients fail face masks. And helmet will take away that problem. Not 100%, it depends on the patient, but it is definitely superior to the face mask. Also, your patient cooperation. What is happening with the patient, they become less independent. So with the helmet, patient can suction themselves. They can access their face without having a nurse there. If you explain how to, again, it depends on the helmet. They can take sips of water without removing the helmet. So that helps not just the patient, also the nurses and physicians, where you are having a less workload. Coughing, speaking, there's nothing that can obstruct the mouth or nose when patient is using helmet interface. A lot of times patients may have vomiting. So again, it prevents from aspiration. With the face mask, patients aspirate because of that, you know, occlusion around your mouth and nose. Where with the helmet, if patient will vomit, it's not going to look good. But guess what? We know that emesis will not get into the patient's airway and in the lungs. Universal fit. Face masks come in different sizes, different shapes. Helmets will come in a different, just the color size most of the time. But it is so easy to fit. Even if you have a helmet that, let's say, is bigger size than your patient's neck is, it's still, you're still able to create that great seal around the neck. And I can tell you based on my practice, I tried different size helmets and I was still successful to create that good seal around the neck. Infection control. That's another issue that came up during pandemic. As you remember at the beginning, everybody was suggesting to intubate the patient just so we can protect our healthcare workers from getting COVID. And there was a lot of suggestion not to use non-invasive ventilation. Where with the helmet, because of that great seal and the minimum air leaks, and because you can apply the HEPA filter at the expiratory site, you're able to actually filter out the pathogen. So this applies to all the other possible pandemics or other diseases like Legionella, SARS, like TB, where you can put the helmet on a patient, even, let's say, in the ER. This is happening a lot in the ER, where you don't know what's the cause of the disease. And then later on, you're finding out that everybody else was exposed to the pathogen. So you can put the helmet, put the HEPA filter on, and at least you know you're minimizing that exposure.
And it also lends itself, I think, to longer transfers within the pre-hospital environment. So patients which need transferring 3-4 hours in a fixed wing or indeed a rotary wing aircraft, you know, it gives you that ability to provide positive pressure and indeed non-invasive ventilation in a finite and confined space without introducing, like you say, pathogen to the wider airframe, which is completely absolutely useful. Can we pivot slightly, Erika, and look at the empirical research that you're involved with? So you looked at patients with ARDS and compared sort of intubation rates to NIV. And now this is a really similar piece of research for many reasons, but like you said, you know, division of labor, intensity of labor to intubate and maintain a patient on ICU is a hugely expensive cost. But, and this can all be prevented by early adoption and early implementation of an IV. Could you maybe speak to the research and very much sort of the intubation rates that you can save from early adoption?
Yeah, so the randomized controlled trial was conducted by Dr. Patel and her colleagues at University of Chicago Hospital in the unit where I worked in a medical ICU. And what we did, we saw powerful benefits of the helmet interface very early on. And we used it for the very vulnerable patients, immunocompromised patients. As you know, these patients, if they get intubated, the chances that we will survive are very slim. The chances that we will have a lot of complications due to intubation are very high. So this is why we chose this very specific group of patients who are also in ARDS. So how sick their patients were, their PF ratio was less than 200. So it's very sick patient who is using non-invasive ventilation. One group used a face mask and we used the bi-level ventilation, and another group used the helmet. Also, the same therapy was applied. And the non-invasive ventilation was for 8 or more hours for these patients. The results were stunning. They noticed, they saw that intubation rate for the helmet patients was 18% versus 62% in the face mask group. Also, the greater ventilator free days in the helmet group patients, it was like 28 days versus 12. Shorter ICU stay, the difference was 3 days of the patients staying in ICU who were on a helmet group versus the face mask. And the definitely lower hospital and 90-day mortality rates. It was, so what happened actually during that study, they end up finishing study much earlier because the results were stunning. And at the same time, it became unethical to put patients on a face mask. So that was the first study done in the United States where we compared helmet NIV, face mask NIV for the immunocompromised patients. Since then, we have more studies coming up, but that was during the COVID. So it's very specific for the COVID patients.
So looking at the different pathologies, Ulrika, that you could use NIV and indeed helmet ventilation on, could you maybe speak to the variety of pathologies? Because I was quite surprised at the amount of pathologies you could actually use it on. Could you maybe speak to the variety that you would consider?
Yes. So I will put it in the three groups. So first, one helmet can be used when we look at the time of the application. Another would be what are the most common types of the acute respiratory distress where helmet can be used, and then groups of patients who will benefit from it. So time of the helmet application can start with pre-admission. Then during the hospital stay, we're talking through all the levels of care. So ER, general ward, ICU, step-down units. During the transfer patients, so a pre-admission that includes all the transfer patients. And also when you have patients who need to be weaned off the ventilator. We saw already benefits of NIV when you use a face mask for the patients who are very hard to wean off the ventilator. And now there are studies that are happening, not so many, but we're trying a different interface like Helmet to see if patients will benefit from it. Now, the common types, as you know, number one, that non-invasive ventilation is the best for is the cardiogenic pulmonary edema. Definitely Helmet is great to apply for, but this is also area where the face mask works perfectly because it's usually very short time. So you know that patient will not develop that discomfort. But if you see that patient has other comorbidities and may use an NIV for much longer, maybe Helmet is the right device to put on. Exacerbation of the COPD, a little bit more tricky because you need to really adjust the settings to make sure that your ventilation is good enough to get rid of all the CO2 that we have. Definitely pneumonia and ARDS. Now, group of patients. This is where I was talking about the immunocompromised patients and why they will benefit from that longer time that NIV gives you to avoid intubation, and where Helmet is just perfect device to do it. Post-operative patients. Some of these patients probably have facial surgery. So what you're gonna do if patient becomes short of breath or hard to ventilate? Are you going to intubate or you will try Helmet where you know that there will be no damage done to the face where, let's say, where the surgery was done. Also, let's not forget about patients who are DNI, who have a DNI order, do not intubate patients. So the last ceiling of their treatment usually ends up non-invasive ventilation. These patients very often become a comfort care patients, and Helmet actually can give you more comfort, less obstructive view, so they can have their family members there, we can communicate with them and actually cause less pain. So that's also a very good place where you can implement Helmet interface. Like, for example, there was a study done in Italy with COVID patients, but they had patients who actually survived COVID and they were DNI and they were 28% of the study patients, where 69% of the full code patients also survived on a Helmet. There are other reasons why patients cannot be intubated. So again, Helmet can be a great use. And pediatric patients, let's not forget about them. Their skin is even thinner and can be damaged much sooner and with the face mask. So Helmet will prevent any of these issues. And also lower the use of the sedation or pain medications. Patients who are overweight or they have especially a lot of issues post-surgery, like post-abdominal surgeries. Again, what are our choices? If we can put a Helmet on this patient and we know he's feeling comfortable and he's not gonna fail NIV, that's great for all of us, right? And then who else I would mention? There are like some case studies about neuromuscular disease patients who have acute respiratory distress. They also can use the Helmet because of their pathologies, other comorbidities, they are using NIV for much longer time. So I think that would be the best group for patients to use it.
I mean, and that's quite encompassing, I think, of various different pathologies, respiratory and otherwise. But I looking at the indications and contraindications, and maybe more so the contraindications. So I'm thinking about, you know, pre-hospital use of NIV. And I guess one of the absolute contraindications is unconsciousness, non-compliance to a mask, yeah, or indeed to helmet, because you need to actively manage that airway. What are some of the absolute and or maybe not absolute contraindications to helmet NIV? What's in the card array of patients that you wouldn't consider NIV for?
So the rules apply the same like for any other interface. Definitely, if there is the severity of the disease and patient is very weak on compensating, so that's going to be an issue, and has like hemodynamic instability, this is where you don't want it to delay intubation, right? So again, delayed intubation can cause more damage for the patient. So you have to be very much aware of what is happening and look at the whole picture. Also, some of the neurological disorders where, like you mentioned, patient has to be awake, alert, cooperate with you when you're using any non-invasive ventilation. Anxiety, agitation can be an issue, but what I learned that, let's say, claustrophobia in the helmet patient is less than 1%. Where with the face mask is much higher, because you have that, you know, feeling that somebody is trying, you know, that something is on your face. Because helmet, with the helmet, nothing is touching the face. Patients actually feel less anxious, less agitated. Other medical conditions, let's say there is a upper respiratory or any respiratory bleeding, or gastroesophageal surgeries are not good for the non-invasive positive pressure ventilation, multi-organ failure. Again, if there is excessive emesis, in some cases, you know, you're not going to be able to use any interface to deliver NIV.
So we could just pivoting slightly and looking, I believe you've studied or just studying a master's degree at the moment. And I just wondered how that has changed your approach to research and indeed maybe your approach to sort of critical analysis of the research.
So I completed my master's degree already. And what I learned that everything that I saw in all these years when I worked in a medical ICU, you know, it's not superficial, but you can learn more about, and you can start to think to the cellular level, you know. So now when I'm thinking about the gas exchange, I can see the alveoli. I try to imagine all these pressures and, you know, why would you do one thing versus another? So definitely the higher education and you know, understanding that on a higher level makes your job easier. And also you understand why decisions are made in one scenario versus another. Another thing is just, I'm just so proud to be a nurse, and that I'm so happy to live in US where I can, you know, achieve higher degree in that field and choose what I want to do here. So the community of nurses and nurse practitioner is so strong and so helpful. So definitely nurse practitioners, at least in our unit where I worked in the medical ICU, was a backbone of the whole unit, especially in the teaching hospital, because they do teach a lot, not just nurses, but also students and interns and residents. And it's a go-to person. And I really appreciate that this profession exists in the United States.
So Rika, as we come to land on the conversation, I just wondered if you could maybe speak to a few take-home messages for listeners, and indeed maybe where you would see the utility of helmets and IV within pre-hospital care. Just maybe from your reflections in the past, and indeed your knowledge of NIV.
So I have a lot of resources that I can share about helmet-based ventilation on my website, and it's helmetbasedventilation.com. I have a lot of protocols there. A lot of studies are there that you can find and learn more about this technology. I feel like the big success and the big change is going to happen after World Health Organization included the helmet-based ventilation therapies in their recent respiratory infection toolkit that was in 2022. And I was very happy to be involved in it. But at the same time, I want to people who are going to use helmet to understand that helmet doesn't look like face mask, first of all, right? So that means helmet will need different settings to deliver the same therapy to the patient. Take your time and learn what settings you have to use and what are the troubleshooting, you know, tips, how to make the patient more comfortable when using the helmet interface. During the COVID time, I did see a lot of physicians trying to put the helmet on a patient, but very often they would fail because of poor helmet design or because they were not fully aware of what we do. So the learning curve is going to happen no matter what kind of new technology you wanted to implement. And the best way to shorten that period is actually to have good instructors, good champions, good team, good planning, and great support from also your hospital administrators for the helmet to actually be used on your patients. There are few papers that it's enough to read, and they are published by Italians where they talk about the specific settings that I mentioned and all the different protocols that you have to use when you use helmet. Also, there is a four-hour course on my website that you can access anytime and learn about helmets. And, you know, I want to see more champions out there who will bring the helmet not just to their supply room, but also to the patient. And when we will see more of that happening, just imagine how many more patients will avoid intubation, how many more ICU beds will be available for patients who are really in need. So that would be my message. Don't cut the corners, learn. This technology is pretty easy when you know what you're doing. Gain the confidence good luck. And I will see how it's going to change the outcomes for many, many patients in your practice.
Rika, that's fantastic. I think what we'll do is we'll put in the show notes link to helmetbasedventilation.com so people can access the tools, they can access the training course, and they can access the empirical research as well that you're involved with. Because I think that was, like you said, a really important synergist for the change and indeed for turning up in the toolkit for WHO. So that's absolutely fantastic. Rika, I just want to thank you for your time actually over the past half an hour, because it's great to get your perspectives on what is a game-changing tool in the toolkit for non-invasive ventilation, and just for the amount of resources you've put on the website. So it's absolutely fantastic. And I do thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Ian.
You're listening to the Pre-Hospital Care Podcast on the Medics Academy Network.